Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller. Find your next obsession. Or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
Prepare your ears, humans. Happy, Sad, Confused begins now.
Today on Happy, Sad, Confused, Stanley Tucci on his new film Supernova and on cracking the code with a life filled with great movies and great food. Hey guys, I'm Josh Horowitz. Welcome to another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. Yes, Mr. Stanley Tucci, the main event on today's show. Shockingly, his first visit to Happy, Sad, Confused. I'm always shocked at the folks that have somehow eluded my grasp. We've been doing this 6 years, and certainly Stanley Tucci's probably made like 8-10 movies in the last 6 years, but for whatever reason, it hasn't lined up schedule-wise, and now it was a great excuse to catch up with Stanley because he is in an excellent new film opposite his beloved friend, Colin Firth. The film is Supernova. He delivers a stellar performance, maybe not in the awards conversation. We'll see how it all pans out, but who cares about that stuff? The important thing is a very fine film and a very fine performance by one of our best, Stanley Tucci, an actor who, whenever he shows up on screen, I know the movie may be great, maybe all right, maybe horrible. He's going to deliver. He always delivers. He's a fantastic, versatile actor, a character actor who can also be a leading man. I'm somewhat infatuated with Stanley Tucci. Who isn't? Come on, guys. And as I alluded to in the opening remarks, he's also crafted a life and career that celebrates just like everything I love. Movies, yes, but he is a connoisseur, a lover of great drink and great food, and has parlayed that expertise into his career. He's got a new CNN travel show in Italy. He's mixing drinks on his Instagram account. He suddenly got like this newfound fame thanks to that. I'm convinced Stanley Tucci has kind of cracked the code. And he also, on the career side, just works with great filmmaker after great filmmaker. It's just that, you know, when you really dive into his career, it's just astounding to look at. And we cover a lot of it in this conversation. We go all the way back to his early work. I mean, I guess the film that really made his career or put him on the map for a lot of people was Big Night, the film he co-directed with his friend Campbell Scott. He also, of course, starred in that alongside Tony Shalhoub. We also talk a little bit about the movie that he followed that up with that he directed called The Imposters that you probably have never heard of, but I kind of go crazy on it in this conversation with Stanley because I had just seen it again for the first time in over 20 years, and it's kind of a delightful, weird farce that I do recommend. It's a curiosity that has eluded many. So check out The Imposters, all the way up to and including, you know, films like Spotlight and Captain America, The First Avenger, The Hunger Games films, you know, early work and like, working alongside directors like Alan Pakula, you know, in The Terminal, Spielberg. He's just like, pick a movie out of his filmography and he always is delivering interesting work. As I said, the new film is called Supernova. It's him and Colin Firth. It's basically a two-hander, and it's kind of a sad story, but it isn't. I wouldn't say it's overly depressing. It's kind of a beautiful tale of a long-term couple who is dealing with an illness. Stanley plays a character who has early-onset dementia. coincidentally, just recently on the podcast, I had Viggo Mortensen talking about a film that also deals with dementia. Anthony Hopkins is in a film called The Father that deals with dementia. This is sadly one of those topics that is becoming, you know, more and more prevalent in our culture and in our lives. So it's not surprising that it's being reflected in our entertainment. So Supernova is the film. It is definitely worth checking out for these two performances and for just a kind of a sublime piece of work. So check that out. And I just had a blast talking to Stanley Tucci, who is as charming as you could expect. Other things to mention. Yes, Stir Crazy, my Comedy Central talk show, continues. This is a fun one, guys. This week, we did an episode with Jamie Dornan. You probably know him best from 50 Shades of Grey. He's done a lot of other work, including a really different side of Jamie in the new film, Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar. I love this movie. It's so funny. It's so absurd. It is so silly. It is from Kristen Wiig and Annie Mumolo. You know Kristen Wiig, of course, but Annie is her kind of co-writing partner at times. They co-wrote, the last film they wrote together was Bridesmaids, and this is their follow-up. Super broad, weird, silly comedy that, yes, does have a heart at the center of it. But within 5 minutes of watching this movie, I was like, oh, I'm in. This is taking big swings, and I am just going for it. And I laughed a whole lot. And Jamie, this is kind of I truly have never seen the side of him, and he really delivers. He sings, he dances, he makes a fool of himself. And that all pretty much describes the episode of Stir Crazy, actually, now that I think of it. He was great. So check that out on Comedy Central's YouTube page, on their Facebook page, on my social media, Joshua Horowitz. I'll put the link up there. Jamie Dornan on this week's Stir Crazy. Excellent episode. Lots of excellent films, by the way, out this week, guys. Just looking at the schedule here, I mentioned Barb and Star. Judas and the Black Messiah is hitting HBO Max. That has Lakeith Stanfield and an amazing performance from Daniel Kaluuya. I would definitely recommend that. Minari is finally, I believe, being released in some theaters, and hopefully it'll be on VOD, etc. soon. Minari is one of the best films of the last year with Steven Yeun. I saw it at Sundance a year ago, and it is really a really special movie. So put that on your list, Minari, M-I-N-A-R-I. So yeah, lots of good entertainment. We're in the midst of the weird awards season, so you'll see some of these films pop up there, like Judas, like Minari. There's no shortage of great entertainment. Hopefully that describes the next 45 minutes as well. This is my conversation with the legend, the man, the myth. It is me and Stanley Tucci. Thank you for joining me via the wonders of Zoom technology today for this conversation, Mr. Tucci. You've evaded my podcast grasp for years, but now I have you where I want you, unless you close the Zoom window, I suppose.
I don't even know how to do that, so don't worry about it.
Okay, perfect. congrats on the new film. Supernova is a wonderful piece of work. You and Colin Firth are predictably excellent. I guess my first thought/question is, like, do you take a certain different level of satisfaction having done this for a while when the pieces click? Because, you know, you can have good experiences on a set that don't necessarily elicit a great film. You can make a great film that doesn't necessarily elicit a great reaction. But this one seems to be checking most, if not all, of those boxes. So is that satisfying for you?
It's very satisfying. And like you say, it's very unusual. Yeah, so it's very satisfying. It's very satisfying, I think, in particular to make an independent film that's getting accolades and you know, garnering a lot of interest, because it's very hard to make independent movies. And if people pay attention, when people start paying attention to them, it's a good thing for future independent films.
And you know, in going back into your work, and I've seen much of your work, it's impossible to see every Stanley Tucci film because you've made just too damn many, sir. You make it tough on someone like me, even a cinephile like myself. But I associate you so much with independent film. I associate you so much with the films I grew up watching in the late 80s and the 90s. You know, I took advantage of this podcast to go back to some of your early work. I watched the last two nights, I watched two of your first two directing efforts, actually. I watched Big Night and the Imposters again.
Oh, my God, yes.
And Big Night gets a lot of love, deservedly so. But let me say for the record, I have always been a big fan of the Imposters, and I think it deserves its due.
Absolute madness, but thank you. I'm thrilled. There's something about that movie that I really love and that I really can't bear at the same time. I wish that I hadn't directed it, because I had a very sort of dogmatic idea about the way I was going to direct this. And I stuck to it, and I think the movie would have been a much better movie had I not done that. But well, still.
Don't be hard on yourself. It is a delight. I mean, it's probably the first time I've seen it in over 20 years, and it held up. For those that don't know, it's you and Oliver Platt, and you basically play two actors / friends / there's some tension there too, but it's all good. It's a farce, and it's an amazing ensemble. It kind of turns into kind of like a mystery, but I would say the first 30 minutes of that film is as funny as any film I can recall. And my sense is, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that you poured a lot of your experiences in the business, especially into that kind of first act of the film.
Oh, absolutely. Because Oliver and I were friends, you know, still are friends. And a lot of that was just based on stuff that we used to do when we did a play together and when we did a movie together and just stuff that we would do just fooling around. It was just sort of all taken to the extreme. And it was really, really fun to do. It was hard to do because it was... I think I underestimated the scope of it, and I'm the guy who wrote it, you know, so I don't know how that happened, but I love the actors. I think they're incredible, and I liked the script. It was simply that a lot of the execution that needed work, but there's some great gags in there. There's some great moments in there. And like I said, the actors are just, I mean, what a group of people. I was so lucky.
Oh my, yeah. And it really does to me seem like you're hitting upon essential truths in your business, whether it's these two friends kind of like giving each other notes early in the film, which is probably a faux pas. Is that generally a faux pas? Do you ever give a co-star a note in a scene? Have you ever been given a note in a scene by a co-star?
You don't
Do you take it with... with applause,
well, no, it depends on who it is. You know, it depends on who it is. If it's a really good friend, then you're going to look out for each other. But you also have to be really careful.
Right.
Nonetheless, if it's somebody you don't know, you really just don't say anything. You know, and what you might do is on the sly go to the director and say, you know, I don't wonder if there was a take done like this, that it might then connect better with the scene that comes after, blah, 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 blah. There seems to be an inconsistency of behavior here, maybe this, you know. You do that especially with younger actors sometimes.
Right. Although there must be no greater sinking feeling if I'm an actor on a set, I see a co-star go over to the director, and then I see the director come back over to me.
But I do it so that you never know that has happened.
You're too good. You're too sly.
I would never. That's rude.
But that film and Big Night, my initial point was sort of like, I always associate you with kind of like a collection of actors from that period. And many of them appear in particular in those films, whether it's Oliver or Buscemi or Hope Davis. Did you feel like there was a fraternity of actors you kind of came up with in the business?
Absolutely, yeah. We all sort of came up together you're all starting. Steve and I would run into each other at auditions all the time. We would always go up for similar roles, and then we ended up, I can't remember how we even became friends, through Aidan Quinn, I think, and his wife Lizzie. And then we just, you know, and then you just start, once you become friendly, you think, well, how can we figure out a way to work together? Because because we love each other, and you want to do that, and we respect each other. The same with Hope, the same with Oliver Platt, with Aidan, with, then once I met Alfred Molina on that, we always stayed friends and you know, like with Colin too, you know, how do you, once you meet these people and you're all about the same age and you do end up, you have very similar experiences coming up.
Yeah. It must be so satisfying at like, you know, at this different stage in your lives than to look at like, I mean, to a man, all these people have succeeded in different, but similar ways sometimes, and to sort of see the ups and downs, and you can relate like no one else can to.
Absolutely. And you know, your career is always sort of doing, you know, going up and down, and you have times where you're doing really well and other times where, you know, you're hoping to get a job and, you know, you're struggling. And that happens consistently over the years, not just when you're young, it happens. And so it's always a bit scarier when you're older because you have kids and a mortgage and all that sort of stuff. Right. And, you know, I think when you're younger, you know, I really couldn't be very choosy. I tried to be, but I couldn't be really because I had to make a living. I can be a bit choosier now, but you know, you see people, I always want to say when people say, oh, why is that guy doing that? Or why is she in that show? Or why did they make that movie? And you want to go, you know what? You have no idea.
Yeah.
You have no idea why. You know, if you don't like it, don't watch it. If you're upset by their choice, don't watch it. You know, maybe they have somebody in their family who's sick and they need money. Maybe something happened with their financial advisor. Maybe they just want enough money so they can retire and get the fuck out of it. You know, right. It's none of your goddamn business.
Well, not to mention it's the top 1% that gets the luxury of total choice.
Yes, of course, of course. So, you know, you just think and a lot of times it's younger actors who will say those things and you're just like, just wait until you have kids.
It is interesting, whether it's by luck or just going where the work was, even like in the 90s, you know, when you were succeeding, you had done a lot on stage. You had to, maybe, I guess part of the reason, and correct me if I'm wrong, of doing something like Big Night at Imposters was to kind of give yourself some opportunity as an actor, as a lead actor too, because.
Yes. Oh, without question. Yeah. But also I was starting to find acting as, I still enjoyed it, but it wasn't satisfying me enough. And also I had to wait around a lot. I don't like waiting. I still don't like it. I like it even less now. And writing, directing gives you the opportunity to control time and space within certain confines. And that is a really exciting thing.
What fills the gaps for you now? Because directing especially, it's tough to get a film off the ground, as you well know.
And I'm a very particular director. I make small movies and they're all the same movie really in different genres, you know, for the most part. But and I prefer working on that scale. But in between, when I'm not doing that, I'll act, you know, in stuff like Harry's movie, Supernova, or a bigger movie to, you know, get some fun role, good director, you make some money. But I'm always sort of writing something, or I'm painting, or I'm, you're reading stuff to figure out what it is you want to do next. You try not to approach, every time you pick up a book, you have to get that thought out of your mind. Should this be a movie, you know, and right. or a TV series? You can't do that. So, I recently am writing. I just finished the second draft of a memoir, My Life Through Food. So, I'm you know, cooking and learning about food is a big part of my life too. And then, of course, I have a family, so that occupies a huge amount of time. You know, I have two little kids. It's not like, you know, I sit around going, gee, what do I do now? You
know? Right. I know. I've avoided responsibility most of my life. And I literally, my wife and I just got a dog and I'm like, oh my God, I don't even know. Like, I mean, I thought like raising kids is tough. Like I can't even handle a dog. Like what's. Yeah.
Why do you have kids and pets?
I can't imagine. I can't imagine.
And then plants. You know? I mean, forget it. You
know? We'll get to the food and drink and Supernova soon, I promise. But let's get into Supernova by way of this.
Yeah.
But 2000, roundabout then, is when the love affair with Colin Firth begins.
Yes, yes.
You looked across a table of Nazis and you said, that's my friend. This is my guy.
That is the man for me, as far as I said. It was an incredibly impressive group of actors I was fortunate enough to be with on that show. I just loved that whole experience because, first of all, it was a really, really important piece of filmmaking, I think. And the story is so, it's so horrifying that you can't believe that it really happened. I mean, because it was so clinical.
And this is just for information's sake. This is conspiracy.
Which tells the story of the, meeting that the Germans had in, I believe it was 1941 in Wannsee, which is just outside of Berlin, where they decided on the structure and how to implement the final solution.
Right.
And it's horrifying. And there was an Austrian film that was made prior to ours, which I had seen. But I have to say, I think conspiracy really works incredibly well. And it was wonderful because we actually had the premiere at the Holocaust Museum in Washington.
Wow.
And that was an amazing experience, an amazing honor.
Yeah, it's a film that I haven't seen, frankly, since it came out, but I want to revisit it. I remember Kenneth Branagh's in it, directed by Frank Pearson, who's kind of a legend in the industry.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing.
Yeah.
But I met Colin. We hit it off. You don't ever know why you hit it off. His sense of humor, maybe, and he's incredibly smart, and his love of Italy. He was dating his wife then and learning Italian, and we just hit it off, and then we stayed friends ever since.
So this is essentially a two-hander of a film. Obviously, there's some excellent other supporting performances, but it is essentially about this this couple that's been together for a while. You play a man who is suffering from early onset dementia, a bit of a road trip movie, kind of saying some goodbyes. You know, it's a small, intimate story that just feels very profound and real and true. I don't know what your experience has been in with people that have had to suffer dementia. I lost my dad this past year, and I actually saw a bit in the last couple of months. So this hit me in a different way. Thank you.
How old was he?
He was 82. And it was related to, he had Parkinson's, so that can often, elicit those kinds of things.
Yes, right.
I mean, I can only imagine the research and this kind of thing and getting into it is not the fun part of the job, but it must have been endlessly fascinating and rewarding in some way.
It is fascinating. It's heartbreaking. I have had no experience with anyone who has had Alzheimer's, early onset or even, late onset. It doesn't seem to run in either side of the family. I know a friend whose wife had early onset Alzheimer's, but I didn't really know her, so I never really saw that. But yes, it's heartbreaking. Harry gave me his Harry McQueen, the director and writer. He gave me all the research into both Colin and myself, and the key thing was just watching documentaries, the documentaries that Harry suggested, and that's kind of all you need sometimes. I read about it, obviously, but you just have to watch the behavior, and it's fascinating, and it's devastating.
And this film really does capture, which is, I found true even in my own limited experience, is that it's tragic for the person suffering. It's in some ways just as tragic, if not more tragic, for the caretaker, for the person that's watching their loved one diminish. And that's, I think, why this works and why each of these performances is fantastic. You guys, I know it's been said a lot, but it bears repeating. You guys switched roles relatively close to production, which doesn't happen very often. Yeah. So presumably you knew Colin's role by the time you were shooting just as well as you.
No, I didn't. You know, when you're doing a film, depending on how it's written, you don't memorize the entire film like a play. You just don't do that.
Right.
Because things are going to change all the time. I mean, you obviously have a very strong sense of it. But unless it's something where there are huge speeches and things like that, it's not necessarily what you do or need to do. And sometimes you can do you a disservice if you do that. Because as I said, things are changing constantly. Unlike right. a play.
You get too locked in, sure.
Yeah, you don't. Yeah, you don't want to get locked into rhythms. You don't want to get locked into. The more I looked at it, the more I thought something doesn't feel right. I feel like the other role. And then Colin one day he goes, "Stan, I think we should switch roles." And I said, "Yeah, I was thinking the same thing." We went to Harry, and poor Harry was like,
oh, God, sorry.
Why me?"
Right.
You know,
you just, you know,
it can't have been easy for him. You know, you got these two guys who are, you know, with combined years in show business that are, you know, like three times as long as Harry's been alive. And, you know, and we just said, we looked and we think, blah, blah, blah.
It does beg, yeah. I mean, I remember seeing, I think it was a production of True West on Broadway a few years back, and
yeah.
and it was I think it was John C. Reilly and
Phil and John
Phil Hoffman, and they would exchange roles every.
Yes. That's common in the theater. It's very common in the theater, and if you were to do this as a play, that's what you would do.
Right.
When I was asked to do art originally in America, and it was. So the original cast was supposed to be Tony Shalhoub, me, and Fred Molina. And we were all doing the imposters when we were asked to do it. There's the funny bit about it, too. And we said, but we want to rotate roles. And they said, no. And so Tony and I said, well, we're not doing it.
you're taking the fun away. That's the fun.
I don't know why. And Fred ended up doing it and was brilliant in it. But it's very common in the theater.
Right.
You know, with certain plays. But the in film it's not. And it's very, and who goes to your co-star and goes, "Hey, let's switch roles." The guy goes, "Yeah, all right." It doesn't happen. Only if it's like your best friend and you're on the same page, you know.
This is the perfect storm that worked. Yeah.
So Harry said, "All right, well, let's just read." So basically we had to audition for Harry, you know, to play the other roles. But it was very obvious that that was the way it was supposed to be.
That's probably your first audition in some time. When's the last time you auditioned, Stanley?
I have no idea, but I'll tell you if anyone asks me again. No, they won't. Well, if they do, it's weird. And you know, the thing about auditioning, I don't know what to say if someone were to ask me to audition, but and I don't like asking people to audition as a director. All I have to do, I can really just look at somebody's work and pretty quickly, just if I don't know them, and pretty quickly go that's an actor, or no, that's a terrible actor, or, you know, but I don't like to do it. But when I have auditioned people, I do the complete opposite of what so many directors did when I was auditioning, which is I'm really nice to them. And a lot of times you don't get that. You know,
you're not passing the karmic evil on. You're not, that's no, good. You're breaking the chain. Good for you.
Even if I know an actor isn't right for a role instantly, like you can sort of tell they'll do one scene. And if you go like, no, this person's absolutely wrong for the role or whatever, I'll say, okay, good, let's do the second scene.
Right.
Because I feel bad. I feel badly because I know those experiences. I went through that for so many years. And to me, it's best, there's no reason not to be nice to people, you know?
What's the one that scarred you for life? What's the one that still haunts your dreams all these years later?
There were two of them. One was Brian De Palma, who I went in an audition for. And my friend Ellen Lewis cast it. So Ellen cast all of my films when I was making them in America. and or three, there's three of my films. And he, Brian De Palma, I auditioned for the Untouchables.
Yep.
To play like Frank Nitti or one of the bad guys.
That would be ironic considering you went on to play Frank.
I know. And I did it, and he just sort of sat there and stared at me. It was weird. It was in a conference room, and he was sitting at a desk, and I was standing sort of next to him. Like, the whole thing was weird. And then I did it, and he went, ooh, scary. And I was like, all right, I don't know how to react to that. And then there was some minor chit-chat about nothing, and then I left, and I was so depressed. It was just creepy and bad and rude. And then another time, it was that one of those, like Don Simpson, wasn't that his name? That
right, character? Bruckheimer and Simpson, sure, yeah.
Didn't he die on a toilet, I think? Well, he, but I think he died sitting on a toilet.
We'll get our fact checkers on it, yeah.
Please. And I was auditioning for some fucking thing, I don't know. And he sat, the director was pretty nice from what I can remember. He sat there and read the New York Post while I was auditioning.
Not even the New York Times, the New York Post.
Not even the Times. Not even the Times. Not even the
Newsweek. If it was the New Yorker, maybe you can. He's engrossed in an article. Go, like,
well, all right, what are you reading? What is it, you know, Talk of the Town? What are you reading, you know? he was reading the fucking New York Post, and I thought, oh my God. Jesus. And it just made you feel so awful. And I vowed that were I ever to direct something, that I would never, ever, ever, ever.
Oh, call out Stanley if you ever catch him reading a New York tabloid, but I don't think he'll do it. He's broken the chain. Good for you, sir. Yeah. It's so funny. I mean, your career, I mean, yes, your career is as varied and fascinating as there is out there. Like, to my nieces, you're always Caesar Flickerman, right? To like my nephew, you're the guy that like made Chris Evans jacked.
That's right.
Congratulations. That's really the claim to fame, let's be honest. But it must be fascinating, like those kinds of films in particular. I mean, you kind of alluded to this before, you know, seems fun, good money. What's the downside? Did either of those feel like leaps or just sort of like, yeah, I'm going to go for both of those kinds of things?
Yeah, no, both. I loved them both. They were actually two of the best experiences I've ever had. And I'm not just saying that because you brought it. I mean, they were amazing. I loved doing Captain America, and I was so sad that I got killed off. I would do it again. And Chris, you know, remains a friend. Haley Atwell is a great friend of ours. I loved it. I mean, I was directing a play on Broadway when that came to me, and I read it, and I was like, and it said something like, you know, Professor Erskine, 70s or something like that. And I was like,
oh no, we're there already? What happened?
I was like, Jesus, this was fucking, you know, this was 10 years ago. I was 50. And I was like, oh my God, do I look that bad? But then you think, should I be insulted or should I be flattered? So I thought, and I really loved the role. It was a great script, it was a great role. And I was like, I really want to do this. And it was the first job that I had done that where I was going to be away from my family since my wife had passed away. And I thought, my God, Captain America. And I loved Captain America when I was a kid growing up. You know, I love the comic books. I still have some of my old comic books. And it was just one of the great. And then I thought, no, this is a great compliment because I've always been cast older than the age I am. And now that I am older, I'm cast even older, I guess. But no, but now.
No, it's totally true. I think back to your older roles, you essentially have been playing like 45 for like 30 26. Years.
Yeah. 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 No, it's true. It's true. It's true. When I did, like one of those, Miami Vices or right. Wise Guy or those TV things. And then, you know, I was like in my late 20s and people thought I was like 40, you know.
Now it's on the good side.
I wasn't wizened or anything, but, you know, but, you know, anyway.
No, and I'm not just saying this, honestly. I always, you know, I'm a true geek, as you can expect from the glasses. And Captain America is kind of one of my favorite of the Marvel movies. I think it's such a sweet, Joe Johnson did a great job with it. It's a great one.
One of my favorite directors I've ever worked with. Nice. I loved working with him because he is so efficient. But he gets it all in these kind of amazing shots. If you look at that movie, it's not covered like crazy. I don't know how he does it. You don't have long days. He's like Spielberg in a way.
Well, he's a protege of Spielberg, right?
Yeah. And you just see that incredible knowledge of cinema, how to move a camera, how to move the actors within a space, how to do so judiciously, how to have people create their own close-ups, when to use a close-up, when not to use a close-up. Boom, your day is done. Have a martini. See you later. See you tomorrow. You know, it's like, that's fun.
You alluded to this before, but like you're like the only like MCU character that like has not returned. Like it's like actually almost annoying. It's like kind of a rude situation, Stanley.
I'm so angry. You have no idea because, you know, I want to work with Chris and Haley again, and it seems terribly unfair.
Did you at least do though? I see on the IMDb. I see that. Did you do voiceover for What If?
Yeah, I did a voiceover thing. Yeah.
Not enough, though. I can tell from your body language. You're like, come on.
Oh, come on. Get me in there. Give me the wig and the thing and the German accent again.
You should have done that for the VO. Just really commit.
I know, but yeah, I should have. Yeah.
I want to segue into, you mentioned martinis. I want to segue into cocktails. But first on the food front, one last big night question. The end of the film, the infamous, the making the eggs at the end of the film. What are you making? Are you making scrambled eggs or an omelet?
It's a frittata.
Okay, good.
Italians don't eat scrambled eggs. They eat frittatas.
I was going to say, because one of the very few things I think I'm actually good at making is scrambled eggs, and that flew in the face of my technique totally.
No, all you're doing is you're scrambling them up, you're constantly moving them, and then you're letting it sit for a minute, and then you're flipping it, and then it's done.
Got it. How are you?
It's not as refined as a French omelet. Do you know what I mean? In its execution. So that's all. Yeah.
How are you received at Italian restaurants, whether in the States or in Italy? Does the big night cred give you kind of dispensation?
Yeah. And it's not even just Italian restaurants. It's like, it was completely life changing.
Oh, that's the smartest move you've ever made then, to be treated like royalty at restaurants the rest of your life?
No, I said to someone once when we were doing some junkie, I can't remember what English. I said, imagine if I made a movie about sex.
let's keep it clean, Stanley. We made it this far.
Yeah. But no, it was amazing, the response. And it still is amazing. And it's allowed me to meet so many people that I admire, chefs and cookbook authors, and it's been really really great, and it catapulted me into a whole different life, you know, and it just heightened my interest in food. And since then I've spent so much time just thinking about food, finding out about food, going into restaurants, writing cookbooks, going into when I go on location, finding, you know, great restaurants. And I don't mean like fancy restaurants. I mean just good restaurants, and finding a place when you're in a city for weeks, months at a time that you go, oh, this is this place that are a few places that you just go to all the time because they make you feel comfortable. Food is good. The people are nice. There's a sense of conviviality and it's lovely. And no, there is no question. If I walk into a restaurant, everyone goes, suddenly you're like, you know, amazing. It's not like, you've been in a lot of movies and we know you. It's that, but then it's like,
They want to impress the guy from Big Night.
Yeah, yeah. And I go, can I go into the kitchen? And they go, of course you can.
You have true, I'm not, you have cracked the code. Like, this is like, you are describing my best life. I grew up, you know, my parents like were foodies and they took me to restaurants in Europe all my childhood. And my wife and I kind of carried the tradition. Like, yeah, I miss people in the pandemic, but I really miss going to restaurants.
No, me too. I love it. I really, really, and I never grew up going to restaurants because it wasn't something that my family could afford. It just wasn't what you did. But now I'm like, I'm addicted, but I also just love to cook at the same time. So yeah, no, it's exciting. I was being sort of egotistical describing how, but I have to say it feels, it is very, very exciting.
You also are now a celebrated mixologist. This might be, has surpassed your fame as an actor somehow. That's saying something.
You make one cocktail and you know.
Who knew? But you know this as well as I do. It's not just the cocktail. It's the vibe. It's everything you brought. Yeah. Paul Feig's been doing this on Instagram too. He's not experiencing the Stanley Tucci level of...
No, I know. And he's a good friend of ours. And I am promoting him as much as I possibly can. Because he makes this really delicious gin too.
Oh, like he has his own brand of gin?
He has his own gin. And it's superb.
Do you have your own, every celebrity now has their own spirit. No, do you have it?
That could happen at some point.
Okay. The next frontier.
Yeah.
I like many, if there's a winner of this last diabolical, horrible year, it's I think drinking. Well, we've all kind of drunk a little bit more.
Yeah.
I took up being kind of an amateur mixologist myself for the first time. I kind of got the cart, started to do my thing. What are the basics? I haven't like figured out bitters, for instance. Like, what do I need in my collection? What's a good kind of like starter?
Yeah, I'll be honest. I'm not the guy to ask because I don't use a lot of bitters. No, okay. I don't. And I really listen. When I was 19, I was a bartender in New York City. This is between my sophomore and junior year in college. And I lived at my aunt and uncle's house and on the Lower East Side, rather right around like Waterside. You know the Waterside complex there?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Right on off of 23rd Street on the east side. That's where they had an apartment there. So I lived there and I worked at Alfredo's, the original of Rome, which used to be in the Citicorp Center. Now this is 1979, and you could bartend when you were 18, 19 years old. And I was taught to bartend by these two amazing bartenders. And I really knew how to make everything. Now, of course, that was 40 years ago, so I don't remember. I don't remember them. So I would have been able to tell you what bitters to use and what, but now I can't. So
is it just the basics? Are you doing, I know you do Negronis, like is it Negronis, yeah. Martinis, yeah, no, margaritas?
Recipes, and then sometimes I'll just throw, that's too sweet. Let me try this with it. I mean, like the one I did for Christmas, the Christmas Cosmo with my wife and brother-in-law and sister-in-law. That was really fun. But to me, a lot of the recipes that I read were too sweet. I didn't like it. There's something was wrong. The lime juice was weird or something. I didn't like it. So I thought, well, and I just experimented for like a couple hours with all different things. And then I thought, oh, that's it. That's what I want to taste. So that was it.
That is the trick I find. Cause like, yes, if I'm going to do a cocktail a day, a cocktail or two a day, even if I go that far, you can't be doing like a super sweet drink. Like we're in trouble.
And so many drinks, I find it's, you know, every other thing is Cointreau or triple sec or simple syrup.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And you're doing the simple syrup. So then every drink they kind of end up tasting a lot of the same. So, you know, I also prefer to taste the alcohol. Yeah.
So you bring your wares on most, if not all sets, correct? You do your thing in the trailer. Have you ever been burned? Have you ever thought you were wrapped for the day? You have a couple martinis and then they're like, we need Stanley back.
No. No, I've never done that. No, thank God. I'm very aware.
We're officially done because Stanley's getting his drink on.
All right, we're ready for that driving sequence. Yeah, no. I said we're done, right? I'm done. Okay.
You know what that means. You know what I'm doing. Supernova is out there to come. We're going to get a little bit of What If at some point. You've shot something in The Kingsman, correct? Are you in Matthew Vaughn's?
I did, but I can't divulge what that is. Yes, and I still haven't seen it. I'm very excited to see it. I love the trailer. It's just like...
Matthew can be kind of a tough guy, like kind of an interesting character, Matthew Vaughn. Do you get along with him?
I got along fine with him. You know, I was there very briefly, so I didn't experience anything but having a great time.
Okay.
I mean, I love those movies. They are bizarre and dark and funny, and the action stuff is just like, it's extraordinary.
Yeah. And it's tough. I mean, as I'm sure like you, I've seen my fair share of action movies. So for me to actually like relish something new and innovative, like I'll give it all the props if they can find a way to reinvent action. And yeah, Matthew knows how to do it.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that just takes it to a whole nother level.
You've worked, as we wrap up, you've worked with like so many amazing filmmakers, whether it's early in the career, you know, up through Spielberg and Matthew Vaughn in recent years. Are there ones that have gotten away that you think of? Like, for instance, I was looking through the resume. I'm like, where's the Coen Brothers film in here? Wait.
Yes, I know. Please call them. No, there's no question. There are so many directors that I would love to work with that I just haven't. I always wanted to work with Marty Scorsese.
Did you ever audition for him?
Oh, yes. And he was always incredibly, he was one of those directors that was the opposite of what I said before. This is a gentleman. And so Scorsese, the Coen brothers, without question, those are just two of my favorites. And then there were, you know, then of course there are the European directors like Pavel Pavlovsky, unbelievable director. Yeah. Bertrand Tavernier was just one of my favorite directors. But someday, maybe, I hope.
Have you been watching a lot this past year in quarantine? What have you been watching lately?
A little bit, yeah. It's hard with little kids.
Right.
So by the time you're ready to watch something and, you know, you're just like, you're so tired that, you know, you can't do it. We've been watching some television stuff, which has been, you know, like we watched Unorthodox, which I thought was really pretty interesting. And now we're watching It's a Sin.
I don't know that
one. It's a British show about the AIDS epidemic.
Got it.
And it's really kind of brilliantly done. I watched George Clooney's movie a few weeks ago, which I thought was great.
Yeah.
And, you know, whatever I can watch, I'll.
As someone that spent a lot of his life in New York City, is there anything I can get you from New York that you can't get in London right now? Anything
you miss? You know what I really want? We were just talking about it because when we were there, my assistant was there with me a couple of times, and she said, you know, those bagels. And I go, I know. She had a friend of ours had gone back to New York, and they sell this stuff that's the everything bagel mix that you can sprinkle on whatever. So she has that somebody brought to her. But yes, you know where I have, lately I've been having these cravings for pastrami sandwiches on rye, chicken noodle soup, latkes, and like going to Barney Greengrass on the Upper West Side and having the, you know, like the sturgeon with the eggs, with the scrambled eggs? And
sure. I grew up with
I can't remember what it was, but.
But yeah, a Sunday morning with lox, eggs, and onions for me was like a special treat. That was like a big thing.
Yeah. Or the H&H bagels with, you know, with cream cheese and lox. And yeah, I'm really, that kind of stuff is, I'm really kind of craving that.
I'll get your care package from Barney Greengrass and Katz's. I'll throw in some babkas in there too for good measure. You'll be taken care of.
Please, a little borscht.
I can't go with you there, but you can have any borscht that comes my way because I'm not eating it. Congratulations on Supernova, another fantastic piece of work. Everybody should truly check it out. Fine work by you and your friend, Mr. Colin Firth. He's no slouch either. Thanks for taking the time out today, sir. Really appreciate
it. Thank you so much. It's been really a pleasure. You made this really fun. Thank you so much.
And so ends another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. Remember to review, rate, and subscribe to this show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm a big podcast person. I'm Daisy Ridley, and I definitely wasn't pressured to do this by Josh.
Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pear.com today to learn more. PAIR.com.
You love podcasts. The stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.